All right. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Clocks Running. I'm Zane, along with your other host, Ant.
What up?
Welcome back to the podcast for everything flag football and flag football officials, hosted by refs from all over the nation. Before we get started tonight, we wanted to talk about why we started Clocks Running and the meaning behind starting this platform for referees and players alike. To tell you before, I never saw myself being a referee for any sport that is, or falling so in love with this sport. It's honestly blown my mind of how the connections I've made, the experiences I've had, it's crazy. But the meaning of being a referee, my meaning of being a referee is because I love the game of flag football and I want to make it better for everyone involved. I knew that once I became comfortable as a referee and being on the football field, I knew I wanted to continue to help grow the sport. And I feel like starting this podcast and being on this platform is to help players see the field from our point of view. And a lot of times we're bashed on, missing a call or even making a bad call or whatever it is, like we always catch the backlash. So I feel like starting this platform can open everyone's eyes to see what we see on the field.
I love it, man. For me, I just my playing days are over, and I got into officiating kind of organically as I was still a player. I talked about that on Tuesday. But just becoming an official, it's honestly it's an honor for me. It's my opportunity to provide for my family, for my children, and still be involved in the game that I love playing. And then just I feel like I have a role to be able to provide players with a fair game and just do it to the best of my ability. This is a sport that's now, the Olympics are on the horizon, and I just feel like we have a huge opportunity as officials to be able to do the best we can to just help this game grow. And I'm excited about that. I also have a huge surprise for us tonight. We got a guest, and before I bring him on, I just got to say this. This is an official that I love. He is my mentor as in the official game, and he's also somebody that I learned from as a player. But then once I stepped into the official role, he brought me right under his wing, and he's taught me so much. Just a couple weeks ago, we were at Oregon State, and he was still teaching me things, helping me grow, and I appreciate it so much. So I want to bring Lance into the studio.
Yep, Lance,
What up,
my
Lance?
man, what is up?
Guys,
So,
thanks for the invite. Thanks for the
yeah,
invite.
of course.
Of course,
Of
of
course.
course.
So, Lance, just before we get going into the topics tonight, can you just give us a real quick rundown of how you got into officiating and why you decided to join?
All right, so not to make myself sound super old. I actually started playing. I started playing 8-man contact because that was the only thing that was offered out here in like the mid-90s. And then one of the guys did a spinoff league, so he continued with 8-man contact as well as 6-man contact. And so I started playing with that. And then I was just kind of hanging around. And one of the guys was one of the refs had either left or didn't show up or something. So one of the league directors says, "Hey, you kind of know the rules. You want to just step in?" I said, "Sure, why not?" I didn't have anything going on that day. And we're what, 2024, 15, 16, 17 plus years later, still doing it. And now with kind of what you guys talked about with travel ball becoming much more prevalent, it's actually given me the opportunity to actually go out to other venues outside of just, you know, even California too, and just sort of see what's out there, promote the sport, promote the game in and of itself, but also hone in on the craft. And to your point, Ant, make sure and help out those that are trying to sort of get into it from a Stripes perspective. And, you know, Zane, that was kind of the one thing that I wanted to sort of make sure you understood when we were working in Tampa. Those 2 days, it was rough, it was cold, but you did a hell of a job. So, you know, that's kind of how I got into it. So that's, you know, 15, 16, 17 years later, I'm still doing it.
Yeah. All right, Zane, do you remember the 90s?
That was about 4 years before I was born. So that's negative for me. But yeah, so I would say Tampa was a great experience because it was the first time me and Lance actually got to work on the field together for such a long period of time. And nice. I mean, our best moment was both of us dancing to, what was it, Barbie Girl? Barbie Girl, yeah. California Girls.
It was Saturday night. It was one of the last games, and we were exhausted. We had 14 plus hours, and I think one of the teams had just finished doing their announcements for their championship. So he was just trying to fill. The DJ was putting in some filler music, and I was just exhausted. I was just so tired. I didn't care if anyone was laughing. I didn't care if anyone saw, and it was just a long day.
Lance, let me just tell you, everybody was laughing, okay? Cool. All right, Zane, what do we got going on tonight?
Yeah, sir. So so tonight, some of our topics are going to be, you know, talking about the difference between contact and non-contact, like differences in playing players and their rules, stuff like that, and basically how we manage it differently. And then we're going to go into a couple Q&As that we had from Instagram, and we're going to go over those. And then to finish it off, we're going to go over upcoming events that everyone has.
Nice. And I appreciate, again, Lance, you coming in, because I think this is perfect. Zane is so, you know, he's part of Camel City, and they're so sold out. They're the best league in the country, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, all that stuff. 1,000%. And they want to so he's going to talk about contact tonight. And Lance, you're a huge IFAF official. You go out to the trials for the U.S. team, and you're definitely extremely involved in the non-contact side of five. So you know, let's get into it. Lance, just if you can kind of talk to the audience about what the QB play looks like for fives non-contact.
When you say QB play, you're talking about in terms of what they're looking at, or?
Yeah, rules and what they're able to do, what they can and can't do, what you like about the way that the quarterback can function in non-contact.
So, I mean, typically, so non-contact is the primary format that a lot of tournaments, especially out here in NorCal, play. But basically, five's non-contact, basically QB has 5 seconds to release the ball outside of a pitch and or 7-yard rush if they cross the line. It's kind of funny. Last night, someone stepped over the line, and I was at 4 when he crossed the line. I'm all like, sorry, you killed yourself. And he's all like, so QB, from the perspective of that, I mean, QB has a lot of flexibility because they, you know, in theory, they have time to actually make the read. One of the neat things as a referee, especially when we're in a 4-man crew, I get to step behind the QB and I actually get to see what he's seeing, he or she is seeing. And I literally can like say, throw the ball, because I can see the windows that the routes that they're doing. So, so from the perspective of QB, it's, you know, they have a 5-second count. If there's no rush, if there is a rush, you know, they just need to release the ball. There is no direct snap. Running, they need to either do a handoff and or a throwback. Obviously, there's different formats have kind of have different roles in the sense of like with between fours and fives. But it's a good format. You know, they say it's non-contact, but it's still football, so there will be some contact. It's a good format for actually, it's actually a great format for folks that want to get into the sport that don't know how to control their bodies. Like really newbies into the sport, newbies that don't know how to like run a route or actually how to play defense. So it's actually a good way without them getting exposed to too much contact.
Speaking of not being able to control their bodies, what do you have to say about QBs and contact, Zane?
QBs and contact are some of the best players because unlike non-contact, where they are limited to certain rules, in contact, as soon as that quarterback receives that ball, he can take right upfield as soon as he pleases, unlike in non-contact where he has to either hand the ball off or wait for a rusher to come at him. In contact, I mean, it is like contact is hands down my favorite format of all time. I about to say the way the quarterback can just take the ball and go. I mean, and the way he's not limited by a pass clock or anything like that is super great. And I will say, speaking of like pass clock, we want to get into rushers next.
Gotcha.
Because in non-contact, Lance, if I'm not mistaken, it is 7 yards back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
I'll say
in contact, it is fully on the line.
Yeah, so I can be a little unique in my perspective about being a rusher. I came from being a contact rusher initially in eights and fives and sixes contact. Ever so often, you know, my 230-pound barreling ram would play non-contact. Not sure why, but I did rush in non-contact as well. So when I'm officiating, I love to be on the line for contact because that's where all the action is, the trenches. Mm-hmm. And it's just there's so much going on, but it's fun and it's challenging. And being on the line as an official in contact, there's so much to watch. And like I know on Tuesday night, they were talking about chameleon eyes. And yeah, that's definitely a challenge to be able to kind of look at the QB, look at the snap, look at the linemen. But man, there's so much action going on. So as far as rushers go in contact, I mean, it's so much fun. And you know, you let those guys play. And hopefully they don't start whining and crying about holds and all this stuff, mm-hmm. and they get to continue to play. I've noticed for me, as an official with contact, I kind of see how that goes. I think there's some really seasoned contact teams that know how to be physical without committing penalties. Now you get some mm-hmm. new teams that maybe are coming from non-contact and they want to give contact a try, and it gets a little tricky, and you start to see horse collars and holding and you know, hands blocking from the back, yeah, hands to the face, things like that. So Lance, I know that contact's not your favorite, but
I've never said that. So let's set the second straight. I've come from contact. So I used to play 8-man contact and 6-man contact. So it's not that I don't like contact. It's just in fives contact, it's like, okay, well, there's only five people. So normally you rush two or three. So you're only having two people on the route. It doesn't excite me. In 8-man gotcha. Contact, I liked it because you had a little bit more flexibility in your concepts. So that's what I, that's, for me, that's the delta. And ask the question because I know what the question is.
No, I just want to know, were you like a blocking back in contact, or what was your position?
So in contact on defense, I was either corner or linebacker.
Oh, okay.
So depending on, so, you know, when I first started, that's kind of where I started. And then on offense, I was usually just slot. So,
gotcha. Okay.
But that's kind of my introduction into it. And to your point, right, like you get a lot of the either newbie teams or net or teams that are coming from non-contact, traditional non-contact into contact, and they've never played contact in general, like they've never done tackle or anything like that. So when you start seeing them like put their hands on the outside of the shoulder, it's super easy to call things because you know what you're looking for. And the simple fact of this will be my third year of tackle, high school tackle. I see now what I have a very distinct thing that I'm looking for when they're blocking, especially in a four-man crew and I'm behind the QB. I can actually see I really see like blocks on the shoulder and they're just grabbing and they are holding. So you have a little bit of leeway with respect to what you see, but I get what you're saying. And when you're watching the line, there is a lot of action. I'm not going to deny that. It's not fun for me, but that's just because I come from a different format.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. You notice a lot of flag guards when you officiate tackle?
Not honestly, more like, to be honest with you, not more than normal, like in terms of relative to like non-contact. I don't see that. Like the tournament that we just did up here in Northern California a couple weeks ago, I didn't see anything. I think what they don't know is they don't know how to leverage downfield blocking. Like on the breakaways, I'm like, the guy's just standing there. I'm like, go help your teammate. There's a couple of leagues that are out here that's what we call hybrid, where it's kind of tough to ref because it's flag, but you can stiff arm if the defender tries to tackle you. So it's like, how do you determine that? So I kind of that's where you get into like logistics of like, okay, what's the difference between flag and that? And that's what they call a hybrid. So there's a little bit of a challenge on that. But yeah, you know, I didn't notice anything that's different. I didn't notice any more flag guarding in contact versus non-contact.
Yeah, so I was more asking as a tackle official if you start to catch yourself seeing flag guards even though it's not a penalty.
I will say this, like we'll go from like a Wednesday night league and I'll do it like a Thursday JV game.
Yeah.
I actually have to hold my whistle for a stiff arm because I will see it and I will actually you know, let that entire thing go because I'll see it. And I've actually almost blew a whistle when the ball hit the ground.
Yeah.
Kind of fumble. Yeah. That's all. Don't do that. So like little things like that, you just have to catch yourself. So you have to be able to flip that switch. But there are some challenges with respect to flipping from flag to tackle and vice versa.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I noticed when I was watching the Super Bowl, I was like screaming at the TV, flag guard, flag guard. You know, so, okay, cool. Well, so as far as non-contact, there's still a rusher. You know, what do you see most in non-contact with rushers?
I see, so a couple things, and you guys kind of touched on it a little bit on the last episode. Rushers don't understand the concept of bunch and what they can and cannot do. From an offensive side, you hear people saying, hey, we're in bunch. They have to rush from the outside. I'm like, no, he does not have to rush from the outside. He can rush from anywhere he wants. I don't care. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that if he rushes from the inside and he initiates the contact, it's going to be on the defense. If he rushes from the outside and contact is initiated, it's going to be on the offense. People don't understand that, and it's the toughest thing to explain to them. Yeah. And then the second piece of it is explaining the concept of, okay, I'm rushing to a spot, but what if the QB moves? I'm like, well, the spot doesn't move. You have to remember, the spot is where he catches the ball.
Yeah.
If I put a marker when he catches the ball, you still have to run. That's where your straight line is. So people don't understand that. And that's the toughest thing to explain, but it's the easiest thing for us to see. Because when in, you have quarterbacks that are, especially at the elite level, they want the motion. They want the motion, and then they want the half rollout on the QB, and the rusher cuts underneath that and initiates the contact. I'm like, well, it's going to be on the defense because where's the dot? They have to understand that. And that's the struggle. But most of the time, the rushers understand after you explain it, but obviously they're some of them can be hard headed. So you have to explain it the next game and the next game. And the other thing that we as a group of officials that are reffing, I noticed that we need to do a better job of explaining to rushers, don't rush head up. You got to be one or left or right of the center, because they have three rushes, right? You cannot explode, you cannot kill the center, especially in the format like a gauntlet or anything like that, because you have a compressed rush lane. So little things like that, just have to be a little bit more wary. And those are the things that I stress to the folks up here in Northern California.
Yeah, gotcha. So Zane, as far as rushers go in contact, from your viewpoint as an official, what are you looking most for with rushers?
So my eyes, as soon as the ball snaps, is on that center. Because that center needs to get his head up and take at least one step backwards for it to be considered, or for the rusher to make contact with the center. Now, you see that. I say you see that, even though it's a little bit more difficult because they are in the middle of a bunch. Because in contact, you normally have 2 to 3 linemen. And with that center being on in the middle, and it's a lot of bodies, you can have 6 bodies on the line. A lot of stuff gets missed, whether that's hands in the face, whether that's a holding, anything like that. But center is the first thing I'm looking for. And then after that, I'm going to either my far side lineman or my near side lineman. Because a lot of times, whatever side I'm on, that far side lineman knows I can't see him because I have 4 people in the way and his rush is going along the outside. And more than likely, there's going to be a hold. So a lot of times, whenever a rusher in contact calls for a hold, it's normally on the far side where I can't see. And that's what happens a lot of times when you get these veteran players who have been playing for 5+ years, and they know where the ref is looking and where the ref isn't, or basically the blind spots for a referee.
Mm-hmm. And there's
a lot on the field, but there's most of them are going to be on that line with the bodies.
Yeah, I just remember watching a Kobe interview, and he said that he would study the mechanics of officials so that he could figure out where the blind spots are. It's that there's definitely that veteran mentality, and you figure out how you can kind of manipulate things a little bit. I have a perfect example of something like that as far as the difference between contact and non-contact is the process of pulling the flag. So if a ball carrier is running up at the sideline and here comes the DB trying to pull that flag, Zane, what do you see most in contact happen when that a flag pull is happening?
So this is honestly my favorite part about flag football or flag contact is pulling the flag, because the best way it was described to me is a legal play in contact for pulling a flag is you can run straight through someone as long as your shoulder doesn't dip, but you can run straight through someone as long as one or both of their flags are in your hand. It's a legal play. It, I mean, you see people get lit up, and it's magic. It's absolute magic. I love it.
Okay. And Lance, for non-contact, how different is that?
It's all in the eyes of the beholder, I suppose. So I look at it for the perspective of, to kind of to Zane's point, if they're making an attempt on the flag, as long as they're not driving through with their shoulders or leading with their shoulders, I generally give the benefit of the doubt because their hands on their hips. What I am looking for is anything egregious where they're like, they pull the flags, and then at the same time, while they're pulling the flags, they like hook the person and pull them down from a non-contact. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, you can't stop momentum. Like if the person is going for the flags and they push, they grab the flags. What we're looking for is during the flag pull, is there anything that's egregious that they're doing, like pulling the flag and then pushing and extending their arms to push? That's what we're looking for. And then obviously if they're, you know, not going for a flag and they're like up in their upper bodies, that's something that we all need to look for. But again, kind of like Zane, as long as they're not driving through with their shoulders, then that's the key. If they're driving through their shoulders, we have to call that. But mm-hmm. if they're not driving through the full shoulders and there's nothing egregious in terms of like either during the flagpole or after the flagpole, then I let that go. So I have a little bit of, I give a little bit of gray area, kind of like what Zane was referring to with respect to that, because it's tough because the hands are on the hip. So I don't like, what I generally tell players, like, what would you like me to do? Your hands on the hips. He's making an attempt on the flag. He may stink at pulling the flag. I can't help that. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, what do you want me to do? So, but generally speaking, most of the guys are understanding. Like once you explain to them kind of what you're looking for.
So okay. I do have a question for you, Lance, being a primary non-contact referee. In non-contact, it says mm-hmm. when a player jumps or dips, mm-hmm. they mm-hmm. kind of give their body up.
No, they don't. There's no such thing as giving their body up. That is a mentality of the athlete versus what the rule book is designed to say. The concept here is when they jump or they dip, this line of sight of where the flag is completely moved. So if I'm 5'8", so I grab the flags in a normal position. However, the guy jumps, you know, 35 inches up in the air, his flags are now over my head. But mm-hmm. I don't have time to prepare to go get to raise my hands up. So it looks like I'm going like through his body or whatever. That is a judgment call on us where, again, it's not egregious. We're not trying to drive him into the ground, but it's not like he didn't give his body up. The position of the flag is completely changed. So there's nothing I can do with respect to that in terms of like if there's some contact where like, you know, he pulls his flag, but he like falls awkwardly onto the ground, or if he dips and now the flag belts are like 2 inches off the ground. Unfortunately, physics kind of comes into play. Your momentum is going to carry you into the player and you were going to make contact on the player. But so I don't like using the words giving up. It is the line of sight of the flags that have completely changed. So therefore you have to adjust for that. And during that adjustment, if there's contact. Now, the caveat is an international ball, it's going to be on the defense. Because no matter what, you cannot make contact. So those that can dip really good, especially on the USA team, they take advantage of it because they should. And there's nothing, I mean, we have been told as international refs, if there's any contact, especially if they dip, throw it. You know, doesn't matter how little the contact, how big the contact, just we'll deal with it after, but throw the flag. It's going to be contact, illegal contact on the defense. Nothing we can do. So that's kind of how I look at it.
So speaking of international jumping is not allowed, right, Lance?
Jumping is not allowed now.
So do you prefer jumping or not?
As a player, I dislike jumping because I really don't want like someone's butt in my face when they're jumping. And I don't like the idea of having to shove them. As a ref, I'm kind of indifferent. It's really tough because it's part of the game. When I first started playing, jumping was not allowed. And the concept of dipping, I've never seen it until I went to my FFWCT tournament in Indy. And I was like, what are they doing? We were like blown away. We had never seen that before. So I'm kind of indifferent as a ref. People just have to understand that it's very difficult for us to make a call on illegal contact, egregious contact, personal foul, things like that, because you are changing the line of sight of where the flag is versus where if you were just trying to hip somebody. They have to understand that more than anything else. But again, I don't like using the term "you're giving yourself up." When we first started, that was used a lot, and then after I thought about it, I don't like, because technically you're not giving yourself up; you're just trying to make a move. And as part of that move, you're again, line of sight is different.
Yeah, Zane, how do you? What are your thoughts on jumping?
In contact, I don't see an issue with it. The only issue that I see is that a lot of time in contact, you have these players who, like Lance said, interpret it as giving your body up.
Yeah.
Same thing for dipping or jumping. A lot of times if a player jumps, they are getting shoved out of bounds or shoved on the ground.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, don't get me wrong, is still amazing. I love it, 100%. And even in dipping, the only issue with dipping is that as soon as the players' flags lower and the defense cannot slow their momentum in time, a lot of times they can also not move their hands, and their hands go straight into the chest. And at that point, I have to throw illegal contact because you weren't going for his flags. You were going for his chest. And then players will argue, oh, but he dipped. He gave his body up. It does not matter whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Your hands need to be on his hips if you are going to shove.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right, so I think we should move on to our next question from an Instagram follower a couple days ago. I think this is an international question, right? Somewhere in Europe? Where did that come from?
It was. I will say, I believe it was Denmark, if I'm not mistaken.
Nice. So we had an official from Denmark ask this question. So basically, he wanted to know what kind of differences we notice from officiating like local leagues that we normally do or big tournaments, multi-day tournaments that are out of town. Zane, what differences do you notice?
I about say, so whenever I officiate my home league, which is Camel City, I mean, I do it with so much passion because Camel City was my first ever. This is where I got my foot. This is where I got my feet wet. This is where I really learned the game of contact. And I hold my Camel City family and my Camel City players to a higher regard than I do a lot of other contact players in these tournaments. But with that being said, I don't want to use the word hate, but whenever I step onto a field as a referee, a lot of times players will say, you play favorites. First of all, I don't like any of y'all since I'm on this field. as soon as we step off, we can be best friends. But if we're on this field, just know no one, everyone is liked or everyone is disliked equally. Yeah. Just know that. I'll say I carry that mentality to tournaments across the country, wherever I go. But it's like at home always has a little bit more, like, how do I put it? I always expect more from my players than I do players from across the country.
Gotcha. Well, how about you, Lance?
Well, the biggest difference between travel and local is speed. Is pure, because we do more non-contact up here in Northern California. I've mentioned it. So we had some players that went to, I think they went to LA, Santa Clarita last year for the first time, just travel. And they got their first taste of the difference between home and travel ball. And I literally asked him, what is the difference? And he goes, it's so much faster.
Yeah.
I go, yes, exactly. That's why we try and prep you guys. You guys think you're great. You're not. Because you're just at home. You got to understand that I'm treating you the way I'm treating everyone else with respect to travel ball. So it's the speed of the game. Like, nothing against the guys here in Northern California, because there's a couple, you know, there's a number of guys that, you know, when they go and travel, they ball out. But in travel, especially like, for instance, when we're in Tampa, I'm hustling pretty good between plays to get to my spot. At home, you can see a definite, like, we'll just walk, we'll stroll, we'll walk slowly, we'll get there, we're good. It's just the speed of the game. And then to kind of piggybacking off a little off saying, like, nationally, we'll just say there's, and I'm sure you guys have heard, like, there is a shortage of reps just in general, especially in football. So tackle and flag. So we're trying to groom guys up here just to better understand, better mechanically in terms of where they're looking for, where their spots are. And, you know, be a little bit more aware of the game in itself, not just as a player, but also as a ref. So to kind of to Zane's point, like kind of just taking pride in your craft, bringing these newbies up to speed about like, hey, you got to move. You should, you know, this is where you're looking. Things like that to increase the number of flag reps that we currently have. Because to your point, you know, you saw it. You saw it, Ant, when you were up here, like we were kind of scrambling towards the end because people were dropping off. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's kind of the thing that I take pride in. And, you know, a couple of the guys like Abdullah and Lawrence who run leagues up here, they kind of use me as kind of that measuring stick to say, hey, Lance, can you help get these guys up and running and help us, you know, get our refs up to at least a decent standard, and then we'll go from there. But you know, it's the biggest difference is just the speed of the game. It's just so much faster, both men's and women's. You're like, oh, holy crap, I gotta go. And when we do travel ball,
yeah, for sure. I just remember the first time that I went out to Orlando, and it was me and another official. Me and her were definitely hustling, but it was, we switched over to fives non-contact rec, and it was the first pool play game of the day, and both teams were running hurry up offenses back and forth the entire time. It was literally like we were running a 24 minute non-stop basketball game. Like, it was just up and down the field, back and forth. There was no, but the funny thing was, is the game ended 6-0. Nobody could score, but they sure were going fast. I would agree with that as far as speed. And then Zane, just like you're talking, I have a player that I talk to on a regular basis, because every time he posts a highlight video of himself, I'm always sending him a message. That's a flag guard. That's it. That's that. You know, your foot was out of bounds, things like that. And he has told me very specifically, he says, anytime you are officiating a field that I'm playing on, I will not dip in front of you because I know you're going to call flag guard on me. So, you know, it's good that he knows I'm going to hold him accountable. And you know, I noticed, though, that he's learned how to dip without flag guarding. So it's cool that, you know, we've kind of built that relationship with, you know, working together in local leagues. So, Zane, what else we got?
We do have a comment or a comment on YouTube from Christian. It says, how do you handle unsportsmanlike conduct or taunting? I will say, Lance, if you want to go ahead and answer this one first.
So my thing is, if you, I'll let you guys celebrate. You guys, so, okay, let me take a step back. We're going to go, we'll go international separately because we have different rules behind that, what we've been told that we need to look for. But normally, I'll let you guys, I'll let players celebrate on the field as long as I can get myself and my counterparts to their spots so we can take care of the point after, right? I don't care. Where I start to sort of look at is when it becomes a longer conversation. It's pressed into two plays, three plays. You're staring down at the person. You drop the ball, you catch it, you know, you drop it in their chest, the defender's chest. That's when you start calling it. I don't have a problem in trash talking during, like, immediately after the play. Don't have a problem. That's part of the game. But the moment you start carrying in a two plays, three plays, four plays later, I'm all like, hey, you guys, I'll be fair warning. I can be somewhat lenient. I'm like, hey, shut up. Let's go. And, you know, clock's running and all that other fun stuff. But the moment they start going more and more, that's when you start throwing unsportsmanlike. Just because it's more about, like, again, you want them to be competitive in the game because it is part of the game, but you also want to rein it in so that it doesn't extend past one or two plays. That's where it gets a little bit tricky, more than anything else. On the international side, we have been literally told anytime there's any celebration on the field, unsportsmanlike, period. No questions asked. Like, just throw it. Doesn't matter who did it, just throw it. They're a little, they want to keep it, the game within, the game going, within the game, inside the lines. So they've told us, like, once you see it and it happens on the field, throw it. If they do it on the sidelines, that's fine. That's why it's on the sidelines.
Yeah, I think for me, just as far as taunting goes, I think probably the flag that I throw the most as far as taunting would be after an interception and they take that ball and they chuck it, you know, 30 yards away from the field. And that's, to me, that's a taunting that's now kind of delayed the play of the game. Somebody has to chase that ball down. For unsportsmanlike, a rule of thumb that I have is I would much rather get an unsportsmanlike, whether it's giving a warning initially or a flag. I want to do that early. I want to kind of set the stage and say, you know, this, whatever this is not going to be allowed. Whether it's a player in my face cussing at me, calling me trash, calling me names, all that stuff, or if it just seems like the trash talk is way too personal and they're not talking about football anymore. So I'd much rather have those penalties happen early, have the warnings get out of the way and everybody calms down, and then move forward instead of all of a sudden when the game is out of control and we're down to the last 2 minutes and it's a close game. And then these 15-yard penalties are really, you know, causing the game to, you know, be affected. So that's kind of how I guess approach it. What about you, Zane?
Well, so I guess this kind of ties back into the contact and non-contact. As a contact ref, you see a lot more unsportsmanlike. You see a lot more taunting because everything does get so physical and everyone wants to show that I'm stronger or I'm better or anything like that. Now, one thing I will say is Camel City has a rule where if you get an unsportsmanlike conduct, the opposing team gets to do a two-point conversion. And I think that's a rule that should be implemented across all platforms. Is that if you get one person like, you get to do an extra point. You suck.
Lance, your expressions were saying everything. You agree, disagree? What do you think?
It's gonna make the game longer, but okay, sure.
Oh, hey, do not forget that clock is still running.
Saying the clock's not running. I'm not disagreeing with the clock not running. Yeah.
All right. So as we're kind of getting close to the end of the show tonight, let's kind of look ahead to the weekend. Lance, you have any officiating gigs going on this weekend?
No, not this weekend. This weekend is going to be the quiet weekend. I will be traveling the next 3 weeks, though, afterwards. This is my weekend of rest.
Gotcha. What are you most excited about in the next few weeks?
So USA football, I'll be in Charlotte, for trials, for next weekend. So that's what I'm super excited about. Just to be a part of the process. It'll be very similar to what we did last year. We're going to go in on Friday, work on some mechanics, some scenarios. Saturday players will be divvied up into teams, and then we'll go run through some scenarios with them to ensure that they understand what they can and cannot do, which is very different. And then similarly for Sunday. So it's an exciting time for us, because this is the first for 2024. So I'm just happy to get the invite.
Is there a particular player, male or female, that you're excited to see that they got an invite?
I'm excited for the newbies that I know of. There's four of them. So there's Nikki from Sacramento, there's Lacey from Colorado, there's Cassie from Arizona, and then Jonah from SoCal. Those are the four that, like, you know, I'm like, great. It's essentially new blood, right? There's a new group of players that are coming in. They're going to show out, and I just want to be able to see them execute and play at the highest level. So that's kind of who I'm excited about.
Awesome. How about you, Zane? What do you got coming up?
I must say, tomorrow I have week two of Camel City. I am super excited for it because I have not reffed since Worlds of this year, and I'm just super excited to get back home to Camel City and just start reffing again. Because after Camel City this weekend, or I'm sorry, after Camel City for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to Charlotte for a local tournament, the Lady Showdown, and then the week after that, I do have USA Flag and Miami.
Awesome.
And what do you have?
So this weekend I have a couple local tournaments. There's going to be a youth and adult tournament tomorrow, Sunday. The Tough organization is putting on a tougher women's draft tournament. It'll be fives non-contact. Biggest thing I'm looking forward to is next weekend, though. USA Flag is coming to Los Angeles County. It's Santa Clarita, which is the northernmost town in Los Angeles County. So for those traveling into LA, if you're expecting to be in downtown LA, downtown LA is going to be about an hour and a half south from where we're at. And that's with no traffic.
Yes,
but I'm excited because the last time that FFWCT USA Flag was here, I was still playing. And I just got to shout out B-Cove, Brandon Covington, on this, because my team was playing. He was playing with YTG at the time. My team was playing YTG. And I remember my teammates on the sideline saying, "Oh, this dude's a ref. He's nobody." And I said, no, guys, you're not ready for this. And man, I tell you, B-Cove put on a show. I mean, he embarrassed us. It was something else. And I just, in the back of my head, I knew what we were getting into playing him, and he did it. And So shout out B-Cub. I know he's been real busy lately too. And you know, I'm excited to be able to work with him this summer as well and in the coming tourneys. So just real quick before we get out of here, there's another thing that just opened up tonight, East Coast Nationals. Are both of you guys planning on going to that?
I am going.
Lance?
Still in the air. I got to figure out some stuff on timing.
Gotcha.
So
the registration opened up for that. I've been trying to make it. That's a long coast to coast flight. So, this year I'm definitely going to be out there. I want to see what this East Coast stuff is all about. Everybody, you know, Camel City, Mamba City, whatever you guys are talking about all the time.
Oh, gosh. Where's Jordan now?
But cool. So just to shout out our sponsor real quick. Once again, we got TZ Customs so the IG is at TZ Customs. This guy has made some amazing cleats for players. I've seen him make some one-of-ones, just regular shoes. So he is the man when it comes to that. He's also started to, I see him coaching on the sideline. In San Diego, he was quarterback in a sixes contact team. So he does it all. He created our logo for this podcast. So I just want to continue to shout him out. Zane, why don't you close us out and we'll get out of here.
Hey, Lance, again, big thank you for coming on tonight. Thank you for talking to us about everything. And I say that's it. I say you have a great night.
All right.
Sounds good.
Later.
Bye.